the U.S. system for helping the military dictatorship torture and suppress environmental activists. Attorney Terry Collingsworth with the legal organization International Rights Advocates said the case against Chiquita has several key differences that should allow the plaintiffs to demand accountability in U.S. courts.
The board of directors of Chiquita, sitting in Cincinnati, Ohio, approved each year the payments to the paramilitary terrorist group in Colombia. So the conspiracy was hatched and implemented to fund a terrorist organization right here in the United States. So we have the U.S. conduct. In addition, Kiobel turned on the fact that Royal Dutch Shell was not a U.S. company and it was merely doing business here, whereas Chiquita is a U.S. company and all of the individual officers that we have also named as defendants are American citizens.
Both Chiquita and the plaintiffs will be filing their final round of legal briefs this week, and oral arguments in the case against Chiquita are expected at the end of the year or early next year. Since this case was filed, Chiquita has sold its subsidiaries in Colombia, though it still buys bananas from the same regions through third-party companies. But many more U.S. companies are operating in the country, and many of them, including Coca-Cola, General Motors, and Drummond Coal, are also accused of abusing their workers. Ben Beachy with the organization Global Trade Watch said the 2011 free trade agreement with the U.S. made it even easier for multinational corporations to set up shop in Colombia, but much harder to regulate them or hold them accountable in court. Instead, it allows companies to take the country to court.
They empower foreign corporations to decide that a given health policy or a given environmental policy violates the so-called investor privileges enshrined in these deals. Then they can sue the sovereign government and demand taxpayer compensation.
A wave of massive protests this summer, led by Colombian farmers, called for the suspension and renegotiation of the free trade agreement, especially the provisions allowing subsidized U.S. crops to flood Colombia's market, but banning subsidies to Colombian farmers. Alice Olstein, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
And that's the program for today. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kump. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.
Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
The time is 6:02 and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio. Up next is Labor Radio at 6 and at 6:30 is Prison Pipeline, followed by Hard Knock Radio at 7 o'clock, so please stay tuned. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, where shopping is an art, celebrating 40 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 3rd through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music. Information can be found at portlandsaturdaymarket.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Oregon Council 75, representing over 25,000 Oregon public and private sector employees, families, and communities, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members since 1942. More information at www.OregonAFSCME.com.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's
Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. This is Jamie Partridge, your host tonight. Tonight's show will be in two parts. One I recorded last week at the National AFL-CIO Convention, a resolution on Honduras, workers' rights, and international solidarity. The second part recorded by John Walsh recently in a Witness for Peace delegation to Nicaragua, interviewing a worker organizing a union in a free trade zone.
Resolution 27, the resolution on Honduras submitted by the Sacramento Central Labor Council. It calls on the Central Labor Councils to urge the Secretary of State, John Kerry, to demand that elections in Honduras be run free of threats and coercion. And it commits the AFL-CIO to encourage affiliate unions to consider sending or supporting observers for the November 2013 national elections in Honduras. On behalf of the Resolutions Committee, I move the adoption of Resolution 27.
The committee recommends that Resolution 27 be adopted. Is there a discussion? Chair recognizes the delegate at mic one.
Good afternoon. Good morning. My name is Lee Cutler. I'm the Secretary Treasurer of the New York State United Teachers and a proud member of the Executive Council of the American Federation of Teachers. I rise in strong support of Resolution 27 that has been submitted by the Sacramento, California Central Labor Council. Brothers and sisters, we all know too well how our American labor movement has been under attack here in the United States these past few years. But President Trumka, I have to thank you for the excitement that we finally feel turning the corner that is palpable in this hall as we continue our conversation. So it is important that we find our stride and voice, that as we find our stride and voice, that we also focus in on the civil and human rights violations of our brothers and sisters in other countries. And Resolution 27 speaks to the dire situation right now in Honduras. Since 2009, the government of Honduras has declared a political and economic war on their own people. As a result, the most vulnerable and needy citizens of Honduras have suffered most. As a teacher myself, I have to mention that teachers in Honduras have been particularly impacted by the tyranny of this government. Long promised improvements in wages, work conditions, and the restoration of their robbed pension funds have not been fulfilled. In Honduras, teachers, students, healthcare workers, public sector employees, journalists, and human rights workers have been targeted by the police and the military. But even in the face of these horrific conditions, these same courageous women and men are pressing for democratic change in Honduras. Listen to this. They've actually formed their own political party, something we may want to consider, and polls show that they have a real chance to win the country's presidential election this November 24th. Yet on the eve of this historic election, and as polling shows that they could win this, the risk of this being snatched away seems to increase each day. It is important that we understand that the ruling elite controls the elections, the media, the judicial system, and the police. The American Federation of Teachers stands in solidarity with our labor brothers and sisters in Honduras, the AFL-CIO, and the Trade Union Confederation of the Americas to demand fair and free elections in Honduras this November. This resolution is extremely important. If we pass it today, we will immediately unleash the political power of the AFL-CIO in this country. Not only does this resolution
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up. Your time's expired.
I will wrap up. This asks us to get Congress to urge our Secretary of State to demand that the national elections be free of threats. It also encourages affiliates of the AFL-CIO to consider sending or supporting observers to the November 20th, 2013 elections. The world is watching us.
Brother.
I encourage you to vote in favor of Resolution 27. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Delegate at mic three.
President Trumka, my name is Bill Camp. I'm the Executive Secretary of the Sacramento Central Labor Council, and I rise in support of this resolution. 26 union leaders have been murdered since the coup. But we have the president of the United Workers of Honduras running for vice president of Honduras. 23 journalists have been murdered since the coup. 31 farm worker leaders have been murdered. 11 gay and lesbian leaders have been murdered. 62 women leaders have been murdered. 46 union youth leaders, 25 candidates for public office on the Libre Party have been murdered. 68 members of the Libre Party have been murdered. 7 leaders of the Garifuna community have been murdered and 100 families driven off their land. Just 3 weeks ago, 3 leaders of the Linka indigenous community were murdered in fighting a mining, a non-union mining company. But we have a unique opportunity to exercise a power that we may not be around, aware of. Every member of the United States House knows someone in the State Department, because that's where the Secretary of State hired their employees from, the U.S. House. And every member of the U.S. House comes to the labor councils and asks for their endorsement. And the one question that our National Federation asked those candidates is, how do you get along with your labor council and your state federation? So this resolution asks us to exercise a power we may not be aware of, and that every labor council call their member of Congress and demand that a political party with a labor leader running for vice president must be protected. And it is the State Department that has the power to guarantee a fair election. This government sends $2 billion a year to the military. As they say in Honduras, there's never been a coup where there's not an American embassy. So we have the power to say to the American embassy, you've got to produce on this. But we would ask each labor council to not only make a phone call, but to go to Honduras or to support someone else going to Honduras. So that we say to the State Department and to the people of Honduras, the labor movement stands by our own. We elect a union leader to be the vice president of Honduras, and we advance the interests of workers throughout the world. Because every country then knows, you run union people for public office, and the labor movement in America will fight hard to make sure they have a fair chance. So we ask for your aye vote on proposition resolution 27. Thank you, Mr.
The committee recommends that resolution 25 be adopted. Is there discussion? Chair recognizes the delegate at mic 3.
Hi, Nancy Wolforth, Office of Professional Employees International Union, and a very proud member of such a union. I'd just like to urge adoption of this resolution and make a very clear point that we, this is not an empty slogan to us. International labor solidarity has actually meant, in many cases, that the unions in sections of Iraq, Colombia, Honduras, and many other countries around the world have been allowed to exist because of the work we have done. We in the AFL-CIO and many affiliated groups, such as U.S. Labor Against the War and other groups, we have actually, when there's a law now in Iraq, they're supposed to create the right to bargain and organize, and they have refused to do that. And the people are getting 3 to 6 years in jail and hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines, trade unionists are. Because of our work with the Solidarity Center of the AFL-CIO, we have a brother, Hassan Imam, who's here, and the other Iraqi trade unionists who are back there, if you want to stand up. Lastly, I would just say that when, for instance, the question of the invasion of Iraq came up, In 2005, the AFL-CIO actually passed a resolution against that because of our work with Iraqi trade unions. We found out where they stood, and we were able to bring forth a resolution that actually reflected the views of workers in Iraq. That's true. We will continue to do so with all of the international delegates and our relationship with all the international trade unions on any issue that comes up that will affect those regions. Thank you.
Thanks, Sister Wolfer. Chair recognizes the delegate at mic two.
Thank you, President Trump. Josie Camacho, Alameda Labor Council, Secretary Treasurer, also First VP of APALA and proud member of CWA 39521. I present this resolution on behalf of our Labor Council, which was submitted to the Resolutions Committee, and I have a couple of points I want to make. International labor solidarity is not about charity. It's a strategy for building global working class power. It is so critical to protecting the labor rights and standards internationally in movements in Iraq, Honduras, Colombia, and many other countries. They're fighting the same fight that we're fighting. We mentioned the Bangladesh fire that had occurred. Well, we know over 100 years, I had the honor and privilege to be invited by Labor Secretary Hilda Solis at the time to commemorate the shirtwaist factory fire where 147 women and girls had died as a result of the terrible working conditions there. So it's in that spirit that we need to fight privatization, poverty, wages, repression of workers in these struggles. A good example is what's happening in Iraq. Hassan Jumaat Awad, president of the Iraq Federation of Oil Unions, which our Labor Council is going to be privileged by having him visit us tomorrow night, is here today in no small measure because of the campaign of international labor solidarity and the U.S. labor against the war, which Michael Eisinger is a leader in and also a delegate to my Labor Council. The strikes that took place there were because of the unsafe conditions, broken promises, harassment, and repression directed at union activists, just like happens here in the United States. But it's much more pointed and it's much more deathlike. Had Brother Jumaat been convicted, he would have suffered years in prison and had to have paid tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. There are other activists that are facing this same oppression. When we act in solidarity with our brothers and sisters around the world, we are not only supporting them, we're supporting our own interests because we know that the economy is global. We know that these corporations are global. And we also know we must stand in solidarity to have a global, strong labor movement. So I urge the body to support this resolution. Thank you.
That was the National AFL-CIO Convention in Los Angeles last week discussing international solidarity. You're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The second half of the show is an interview with a Nicaraguan worker organizing a union in a free trade zone, recorded by John Walsh in a recent visit on a Witness for Peace delegation.
The following conversation was recorded in Nicaragua with a maquila worker during the last week of August. As free trade agreements have proliferated, maquilas have spread across Latin America. These are plants operated by transnational corporations that use less expensive labor and tax breaks from the host governments in order to reap greater profits. The worker with whom we spoke had experienced the difference between a maquila with a union and others without. She told us that with a union, The workers had personal protective equipment to keep them safe and healthy, that they had access to a medical clinic, received a subsidy for their food and transportation, and were not always required to put in compulsory overtime. We talked to her more about unions and maquilas.
As a unionist, I would like to know what is necessary to form a union in a maquila. Como sindicalista, soy yo. Me interesaría saber qué es necesario para formar un sindicato adentro de una maquila.
Sí, allá donde estaba en la otra empresa donde se formó el sindicato, ese fue el año antepasado, hace 2 años que se formó el sindicato, pero se comenzó como con 15 personas. Y cuando el sindicato empezó, se dieron cuenta los gerentes de la empresa fueron cancelados. Pero ellos ya tenían cierta parte de trabajadores ya inscritos al sindicato, entonces ya apoyando nosotros al sindicato, entonces les exigieron el Ministerio del Trabajo que los reintegraran otra vez a su trabajo, porque ya tenían un mínimo de trabajadores que estaban ya inscritos en el sindicato, entonces fueron otra vez reintegrados a su trabajo.
It started with 15 people who wanted to form a union, and they started to gather signatures. And what happened was that they were fired. The managers realized that they were trying to form a union, and they fired them. But they already had a list of the necessary number that they needed to form the union. They were already registered. They already had registered enough people. So what they did was they went to the Minister of Labor and they showed them that they had enough signatures to form the union. And so the Minister of Labor demanded that the free trade zone allow the union to form.
Aquí en Pilas se empezó a formar un sindicato. Pero cuando se dieron cuenta de que se estaba formando el sindicato, fueron canceladas las mujeres. Había mujeres y fueron canceladas. Esas mujeres no pueden regresar a otra empresa, Zona Blanca, a trabajar porque las mandaron a dar pues, cuenta de que ellas pertenecían o la toman como que son levantagente, algún movimiento, entonces a ellas no les permiten trabajar en otra Zona Blanca después de que se dan cuenta de que están formando sindicato.
They were forced to rehire the people who they had fired for forming a union. And another factor here, some women also tried to organize a union, and they were fired. The women had tried to gather the votes, and now they can't get a job in any other factory. The factories like pass the information on that these women are movers or shakers, and they're trying to organize the people, and so now they can't get a job in any free trade zone. Mm. It's because of that nobody wants to start to try to organize a union.
Is this retaliation legal, or is the problem a lack of enforcement? ¿Es legal estos hechos de retaliación en contra de las compañeras que han hecho esfuerzos para formar sindicato, o es una pregunta de falta de seguimiento de leyes vigentes?
O sea, que falta de seguimiento porque si se pusiera un grupo y miran de que tienen gente porque le piden un promedio, por lo menos el Ministerio de Trabajo los apoya, porque el Ministerio de Trabajo es una organización que apoya al trabajador. Pueden ingresar para poder firmar un documento para que sea legal ese sindicato. O sea, pero como no tienen valor, las mujeres no tienen valor porque le dicen a una, dice no, le dicen a otra, no. Entonces, incluso yo tengo a mi hija que está aquí, en esta zona de aquí. Ayer le dieron un papelito para que lo llenara y me dice, mamá, mire, me dieron una ficha para que me afiliara al sindicato. Pero yo no me quiero afiliar porque si se dan cuenta me corren. Entonces, dejó la ficha porque no la quiso llenar porque tiene miedo que la cancele. Y usted sabe que yo necesito trabajar. Sí.
So it's a problem of lack of enforcement because it's true that the Minister of Labor is there to help us. That's their job, is to support the worker. And so the problem is that they have to have a certain number of signatures. There's like a rule, there's a minimum that you need to have in order to be able to form. So if they have that amount, the Minister of Labor has to, it's their job to support that union. But the problem is that a lot of times women don't. You know, people say, sign this, and the people say, no, I don't want to, because they're afraid of what often happens. They have to have courage. And for instance, my daughter is working in this new free trade zone here in the community, and she was given a piece of paper, and she said, and she asked, and she was asked to sign it, and she said to me, you know, Mama, like, I don't want to sign this because I know that they'll fire me if they figure it out, and you know that I need this work, and so she didn't sign the paper.
Has anyone tried getting support from the customers of some of these companies that are hiring the workers? ¿Ha buscado alguien el apoyo de los clientes de las empresas que están dando trabajo a ustedes en las campañas para formar sindicato?
O sea, que al dueño de la empresa no le conviene que haya un sindicato en la empresa.
Claro.
Sí, por lo que no le conviene, por lo que el trabajador pide esa ayuda económica con el transporte, eso tiene que salir de ahí, hay un salario extra. Entonces, hay un salario que pide para el alimento, entonces tampoco a él no le conviene. Entonces, para él es mejor de que no existe el sindicato allí, entonces él no lo apoya.
Sí, pero por ejemplo, si soy cliente de la empresa, no la empresa misma, pero si compra el producto de esa empresa y se digo yo que a mí me gustaría si hubiera sindicato allá, hay un poquito de presión a la empresa para decir sí a los trabajadores que quieren sindicato.
Sí, los organizadores del sindicato, los que buscan dos firmas, han intentado comunicarse con gente que quizás compra la ropa, decir a la fábrica no.
No hubo esa solidaridad.
No han hecho eso.
No.
So he was clarifying. So if as a consumer, someone who wants to buy, I could say to the factory, I pressure them to form a union, and I asked her. So then I said, as an organizer, someone trying to form a union, have they ever tried to communicate with the consumer? And she said, no, that's not something that they've done. She started a while ago by saying it's not convenient or it's not in the interest of the owner to have a union because for them it's extra money that they have to give, it's extra attention, and so for them it's not convenient and they don't support the union. I was gonna ask if she could just talk a little bit about like the effect on the community, the free trade zone's effect on the community, and like what kind of person works there and what effects it has on the family and that kind of thing.
¿Cómo ha afectado las zonas francas a la comunidad? ¿Quiénes son que trabajan ahí? ¿Y cómo se afecta a la familia?
Bueno, no ha afectado, sino más bien ha venido a resolver la economía de la mujer en el hogar, porque la mayoría de las mujeres que trabajan en zonas francas son madres solteras. Entonces, ha venido como a dar un poco más en el hogar, pues, para la mantención de sus hijos, porque su madre es soltera y no ha afectado en nada, más bien ha ayudado a que muchas mujeres que no trabajaban hoy trabajen y que mantengan sus hogares, sus hijos.
¿Y las horas de trabajo?
Bueno, las horas de trabajo son 9 horas diarias. Sí, solamente cuando hay extra, entonces son exigidas las extra, se le exigen las extra y una hora diaria y el sábado todo el día.
So it's affected us in a good way. It's helped, it's resolved issues that we have economically in our homes, because most people who work in free trade zones are single mothers. And so for us, it's given us a way to maintain our children and to support our home. For us, it's not affected us negatively, it's helped us, because now many women have work who before didn't. And I asked her what hours people work, and she said, right now it's about nine hours a day, but in the factories, extra overtime is often demanded, and so that will be at least an hour a day, and Saturday all day long.
Who takes care of your children when you're not home? When you were at work.
¿Quién cuidaba a sus hijos cuando estaba trabajando?
A mis hijos, yo los dejaba solo porque tenía un mayor que ya tenía 12 años, entonces para no pagar que me los cuidara porque no me ajustaba, entonces lo dejaba al mayor cuidando a los dos más pequeños.
When my sons were young, I left them with my oldest son because my oldest son was 12 years old already. So I didn't want to have to pay somebody to take care of them. So the 12-year-old took care of the two younger ones while I was working.
solo que me tenía que levantar tempranito para dejar las cosas preparadas ya para el día y la noche también, ya llegaba la hora en la noche para dejar esa ropa limpia, entonces tenía que hacer trabajo extra después de mi trabajo. Eso era lo único que hacía después.
But also I had to work, wake up very early to prepare what they needed for the day, prepare their everything that they would need. And then when I got home at night, I would have to stay up late washing their clothes and making sure everything was ready. So I had to work overtime also in my home.
Normally, how long do women work in a maquila? En promedio, ¿cuánto tiempo se queda una trabajadora trabajando adentro de una maquila? ¿Un año, dos años, tres años?
Bueno, en el caso mío, yo en esta última empresa me he quedado 5 años porque el trato me ha tratado bien. En las otras empresas, no, en las otras empresas, 1 año, 1 año y medio, 2 años, así me ha dado. Pero en esta última sí, yo me he quedado 5 años.
In my personal history, this last factory that I worked in, I was there for 5 years, but that was because they treated me well. The other factories that I worked at, I was just there for 1 year or 2 years. I didn't stay long because they didn't treat me well.
So, Nicaragua is experimenting pretty significant growth in maquiladoras and tobacco plants, cigar production. Is that the future of Nicaragua, to be the cheap labor for the international economic system? Nicaragua está experimentando un crecimiento grande en las zonas francas y en las plantas, por ejemplo, de producción de tabaco en el norte del país. Entonces, ¿es ese el futuro de Nicaragua, ser fuente de mano de obra barata